they are distilled to the terrible actions they did that got them in prison, which, as I hope we all know, are often not so much a product of people being evil as much as a product of terrible circumstances and desperation.
Welcome to VoiceOver Movies That Move Us. I'm your host, Heather Bigley, and I talk to people about the movies that made a mark that led to cinematic epiphanies. And it's not always the movie you'd expect. Today, our movie is Paddington 2 from 2017, written and directed by Paul King. If you don't know, this movie has a huge following online. In fact, it has one of the highest ratings for the longest time on Rotten Tomatoes. In this film, Paddington is living with the Brown family, and he wants to save money for a birthday present for his Aunt Lucy, who lives in Peru. When the object he's been saving for is stolen from a local antique shop, Paddington is convicted and sent to jail. Because it's Paddington, he makes friends with everyone and changes the culture of the prison. There's also a jailbreak and a runaway train sequence, all done with this really stunning yet thoughtful animation. The film stars Ben Whishaw as Paddington, Hugh Grant, Hugh Bonneville, Sally Hawkins, Brendan Gleeson, Jim Broadbent, among other great United Kingdom actors. My guest today is Lex Rofberg, who last joined us for a discussion of Jewish representation in Nobody Wants This. He called in from Rhode Island, where he is the senior Jewish educator of Judaism Unbound. Stick around after the conversation for some recommendations.
I'm Jewish, I'm a rabbi myself, and I think it's important to have teachers that you see as forming your ways of thinking and ways of being in the world. And as much as it might seem a little funny to see a fictional bear from a children's series, both books and movies, as a Rebbe, I actually do see Paddington as one of my Rebbes, and I don't mean that as a joke. Like, I actually think that it's a good thing, the extent to which people
Right.
watch these movies and try to grow spiritually or in how they act in the world.
So the first time I heard about this movie really was I was watching The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent from 2022.
Great
and,
movie.
Yes. And Nick Cage.
Wild experience.
Playing Nick Cage talks to Pedro Pascal, who's like this billionaire playboy with too much money. And anyway, they're talking about favorite movies.
Look, can you just stop stalling and answer the question? What is your third favorite movie of all time?
Paddington 2.
What? Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, Paddington 2, connect those dots. I mean, I don't want to be a snob, but...
I cried through the entire thing and made me want to be a better man.
Mom?
Paddington 2 is incredible.
And I was like, what in the world? And then I started hearing Paddington 2, Paddington 2, Paddington 2. So there is a whole online love affair happening with this movie, right? The idea that people are out there saying, no, this is a fantastic movie and it makes you want to be a better person and you should watch it, actually is really helpful for me too. Because, you know, online can be such a dumpster fire. And we often use it to doom scroll or scare ourselves, or the worst news of our lives comes to us online. And yet here is like there's a community saying, here's something beautiful that we want to share with everybody. And please make sure to partake. That to me is really great.
It's really great. It's so funny. Like, you watch this movie and you want to be a better human being, and Paddington's not, right? Like, that's
right.
That's like, it actually takes a non-human to help us reflect on our humanness, which that feels true to me. Like, I actually think that's often how it works. That's why so many favorite movies of kids are about animals, or I mean, even emotions in the Inside Out world. We personify things that are not persons for the sake of understanding our personness, our humanity. It did something that many movies, I think, try to do, but it pulled off this, I don't want to say wholesome. People talk about this movie as like deeply wholesome, and that's true, But it's actually it has some darkness. It's not value neutral about our society and about incarceration and about security mechanisms we set up in our world and how we think about collectivity. A lot of deeply political questions. So it's not only like, oh, look at how nice the world is and there's this cute, lovely bear. A lot of people think that's what they're going to watch. And then it's that and cutting commentary on the world we live in at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I'm really invested in being an ambassador to it, sharing it with the world, because when you see this movie and it's as amazing as it is, two things happen. One, you love that movie and you have a great experience. But the other thing is you are opened up to imagine that the purpose of art for children is not just sort of, oh, it's training wheels art. It's less sophisticated. Like, I'm really committed to adults engaging with work designed for children. And I actually think this movie was made both for children and adults, like a lot of children's movies are. I think it operates on both levels and works very well on both levels. I'm saying this as a Jew, so I don't mean it disparagingly. I think it is inflected with Christian notions and values in many senses that are part of what is beautiful about it. I didn't expect the deep emotional pull that I had and the political consciousness that it had. And it was meaningful to experience that.
I find the movie so lovely in the way it treats discussions of, say, immigration and incarceration.
Yeah.
And adoption or pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. There are all these things we say to ourselves, at least in America, that get sort of turned over and inspected and then, you know, treated by this British film and its bear.
I mean, we could talk about Frozen and Frozen 2 doing this. We could talk about Zootopia doing this. Like, for me, in Paddington 2 specifically, immigration you named, and incarceration. Notions of outsider and insider are pivotal to every Paddington movie because Paddington is a bear. And it's funny because he's a talking bear that talks to all the characters. And so on some level, he's less outsider to humanity than like bears in our world. He talks and interacts with everyone like everybody else, but also the characters still have a fear of bears and whatever. And so he is an immigrant to England in a literal sense. So that's an opportunity to talk about how people who are outsiders through nativism and otherwise are seen as inherently suspicious. Incarceration comes up. And then once he's there, the movie, I think, does a really good job consciously and purposefully showing how people who are incarcerated are understood as just basically inhuman. And even some of the movie's good characters, I mean, the Brown family, Mr. Brown specifically, they go and visit Paddington in prison.
I must say it's a great relief to know that Paddington's already made such sweet friends.
Would you excuse us a moment? What are you doing?
Talking to the nice men.
Nice men? Mary, we can't trust these people. I mean, look at them. Talk about a rogue's gallery. Hideous. And as for that bearded baboon in the middle, he's hardly got two brain cells to rub together.
We can still hear you, Mr. Brown.
Oh, yeah.
That was the light you turned off.
The microphone is on the other side. It's got
microphone written on it.
And they're very nonplussed because they know that the entire world sees them as just the worst thing they did in the world. They're not human. They are distilled to the terrible actions they did that got them in prison, which, as I hope we all know, are often not so much a product of people being evil as much as a product of terrible circumstances and desperation. The movie shows you the suspicion and the skepticism that people have both towards immigrants and towards those who are incarcerated. And it does it with respect to the prison. And also, I actually think an under-discussed part of the movie is this character who lives in the neighborhood with Paddington, he appoints himself to the community defense force. Many of us know these kinds of people. They live their lives through a prism of fear and suspicion of those who are different.
Fellow citizens, I've just received intelligence. The bear has escaped and may be heading this way. I've raised the neighborhood panic level to wild hysteria.
Get out of the way, Mr. Curry.
Paddington's not coming this way.
He's going to clear his name.
And we're going to bring him home.
We don't want him here.
Paddington is his sort of chosen scapegoat. If it weren't Paddington, it would be somebody else. It argues implicitly that the people who are appointed or who self-appoint to protect us are actually the danger. I mean, it's a very radical approach to policing and to incarceration. And I think it does subtly good spiritual or ideological work. I mean, others could say, like, again, it's propaganda. I don't know that that's wrong. I do think this movie has specific values, and those values are antagonistic to many folks with more conservative views of the world than mine. And I think that good art does that. I think that good art finds ways to not just be like, ooh, a fun experience for an hour and a half or 2 hours, but also to actually shape people. Because the secret about pop culture, about film, TV, whatever, is that, like, scripture or religious material is just pop culture plus time, in my view. Like, if we look at the Bible, like, I often talk about the Book of Esther as a good example of this. Like, the Book of Esther was clearly, like, a really great story.
Yeah.
People told. And then enough time passes that you're like, oh, this is scripture. It's just a really beautiful, interesting story with meditations on violence and revenge. By the way, its ideas about violence and revenge are certainly not mine. I don't ascribe to them.
Right.
And I think it's worth sitting with. And so we should relate to the Paddington 2s of the world and other movies as potentially shaping who we are. And we should give them, we shouldn't let them off the hook and just say, oh, they should just sort of entertain us.
And I think one of the lovely things is from scripture, to quote Jesus, those with eyes to see will see, and those with ears to hear will hear. The text is there, and we can plumb the depths of the text as deep as we'd like. On one level, we can just enjoy the incredible animation. We can enjoy the hijinks of, you know, Paddington escaping from prison in a hot air balloon. There are all these different things that we can enjoy. But at the same time, we can put weight on this and we can start asking it questions about how we should live our own lives. One of the things that I found really simple and really delightful is Paddington trying to save up money for this present. So he decides he's going to create a window washing business. And I think we get this idea of, like, Paddington has initiative, Paddington is solving his own problems, which are all important things for us to remember. But also, people have created space for him to wash their windows. The community says, well, I don't really need my windows washed, but Paddington is trying to save money, so I have a little extra. I can, you know, give Paddington a little. Like, this only happens if the community supports him. And and it's necessary and important. And when I think about that, right? When someone around you is trying to do something good and trying to do something more than they have in the past, how important is it for me to recognize that? And support the dignity of their effort by saying, oh, I would love if you came and washed my windows.
Yeah.
And then there's always, like, the delight of, you know, Paddington covered in suds and, like, sort of scrubbing the windows with his back and et cetera, et cetera. So just simple things like that that kept reminding me of the communal nature of our lives and how building those relationships is one of the best things we can do for ourselves and for the people that we're building the relationship with. And we see that in the prison. You said this really important thing that I think all of us as religious people should keep in mind. You know, none of us is our worst decision. Scripture tells us that none of us is our worst decision. And Paddington walks in to this place where people are saying, he's really awful, he's a monster, be careful. Yep. There. And he says, well, actually, I'm going to teach him how to make marmalade. And it turns out he's a great patisserie baker, right? Like, you know, and then we get to recuperate people through their interests, through their own work and effort.
I mean, finding the good in people is articulated as a clear theme of the movie. I mean, Paddington specifically quotes Lucy saying,
"Aunt Lucy said, if you look for the good in people, you'll find it."
Again, a positive feature of children's art is that you have to say things explicitly, because you're assuming that a five-year-old is watching, and so you can't just imply stuff. You have to be a little bit on the nose, to use a term that's usually an insult of a movie. What that leads to is actually movies that are very clear sometimes in values. And so he literally says one of the core ideas of the movie, where other movies would sort of, you'd have to infer it, which is, when you look for the good in people, you find it. The character Knuckles in the prison, he's sort of the paradigmatic person you'd expect to not be good. Even in the prison, with all these folks that have done whatever things they've done, the other prisoners are deeply afraid of Knuckles. And so Knuckles has this journey. You see it coming as a viewer, as an adult viewer. Like, he has this rehabilitation from villain of villains, like perceived villain of perceived villains in a prison context, where all these folks, you know, they look like the way society teaches us to see scary people. And Knuckles is like the scariest one. And then Paddington becomes the co-chef. They make marmalade together. Everybody gets really excited about it. It brings folks together. And it's a story of solidarity. As that's happening, I mean, you get like a montage where Knuckles starts as he's this scary guy and Paddington is having his first interactions with him. And then they start to make the marmalade and it galvanizes everyone. And the song that plays in the background is called Love Thy Neighbor.
Come on, man. Let's get cooking.
If this little proverb you would understand, you will lend your brothers a helping hand.
Oh, nice.
If this
large,
little
though.
Proverb you will understand, you will lend your brothers a helping
Thank
hand.
Thank you,
Vips. Whether you are white, green, blue,
there
or brown.
There you go, Paddington.
Oh, six
Knuckles.
Feet of 40
I want those penny poles now.
Whether you agree or you should disagree, you cannot disregard the truth of this philosophy. Singing life would be easier, time would be breezier if you love your neighbor.
Excuse me, Professor. What would Aunt Lucy say?
Always use cake for.
Well, then.
We all know there is ideal happiness above, which arises from the presence
Give a taste,
of brotherly
Warden.
Love.
Thank you, Paddington.
So if the joys of a heaven you wish to find it,
this Butter is an
example you should try to emulate. Resist all temptation, restrain from strife, and try to live a noble and an upright life. And this too you must learn, make the best of what you earn. Strictly learn to leave your brothers properly alone.
Life, life would be easier, time would be breezier if you love your neighbor.
Gorgeous little melody. I paused at home when I was rewatching. Did I just hear Love Your Neighbor? And sure enough, that's the name of the song. So again, this movie knows that it's doing like character shaping or ideological work. And it does so via notions of solidarity, notions of collectivity. Come together with the people in the prison, find things that you share, connect around food. I love the way this movie and other Paddingtons teaches us that, you know, marmalade and sandwiches is actually a really important way that you can connect people who are otherwise individuals. There's also class commentary happening with the villain character, who we haven't talked much about, Phoenix Buchanan. He's very much like the elite guy. He's like a famous actor. And in the same way you are taught to see the outsider bear and the prisoners as villains, we are taught to see the Phoenix Buchanans of the world with their polished looks and their elite credentials as not the villains. And the movie teaches us precisely that person is often the villain.
But at the same time, Phoenix Buchanan is offered like some understand.
Yeah.
Like it's not like he's completely evil. we are given these insights into, he like sort of inherits this understanding from his grandfather. He's kind of on this quest. He's talking to all the different costumes around him. And the end sequence, I think the end.
Yes, the end credits scene.
Credits when he is actually singing this Stephen Sondheim song.
Sit, kitty cat, we won't get home for hours. Relax and listen to the rain on the roof go. Blunk, blank, a blink, blunk, blank, a blink. Let's have a drink and shelter from the showers. Rain, rain, don't go away. Fill up the sky. Rain through the night, we'll stay cozy and dry. Listen to the rain on the roof go. Pit, pity, pat, plunk a blink, blank. Pity that it's not a hurricane. Listen, clink to the lovely rain.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it seems I didn't need the West End after all. Just a captive audience.
There's some gentleness and humor and some sort of understanding for that character.
Because the movie embodies its value of finding the good in people, even its core villain. It leaves that to the end credits scene. But yes, it absolutely gives him this cutesy moment where he's performing this whole thing and others are performing with him that implies he's grown a little bit. And that's, I think, really beautiful, that even the people that we watch a movie and we see them as the bad guys, they are permitted and should be permitted growth as well. I mean, his character is so fascinating. And for anybody in the, like, it was strange to me as somebody who grew up with a father who loved the movie The Producers, very important to a lot of cultural Jews. The movie, yes, The Producers ends with a scene where they sing, in very similar style, the song Prisoners of Love, Blue Skies Above. They close in the same way where somebody is sent to jail and then there's like a group dance number. I like, part of me was like, did Paddington 2 just plagiarize The Producers? I think it's an homage. I think for the small number of people who get the connection, I think it was probably on purpose, because for me it was like, wow, it can't just be coincidence that two movies landed on Broadway dance number in a prison. Right.
I love Paddington, but having these familiar faces, these familiar actors, for me was something that I also really loved. Like, mm-hmm, Sally Hawkins, the mom who wants to swim the French, you know, the English Channel. I saw many films of her when she was much younger, you know, from 20 years ago. She plays this kind of frenetic, an anxious character who is just kind of facing overwhelming experience after overwhelming experience. So to have her in this lovely role where she's, mm-hmm, calmly and peacefully facing challenges, lovingly doing so, like there at the end where she's kind of kneeling by Paddington and she says to him,
"You wanted to get that book so Aunt Lucy could see London, didn't you?"
"It was always her dream."
"Well, we thought, why look at London in a book when she could see the real thing? Why don't you go and answer that?"
There was something healing for me about seeing Sally Hawkins get to play a role where she's at peace.
So I'd love to close just by bringing a little more explicitly the ways in which I see religious value in this. I spend a lot of time going to spaces and saying things are religious that other people don't think are religious. I go to spaces and talk about how pop culture fandom or pop culture viewing, in this case, if you're not like a deep cut fan like I am, is a religious kind of experience. I really believe both descriptively and prescriptively. I think both just the way the world is and the way the world should be is that movies we watch, TV that we engage with and watch, shapes who we are in the world. Whether that's good or bad, that's the prescriptive part. I actually think it's good. I think it is helpful to be able to grow through that which isn't real, quote unquote. It distances us from it. Losing yourself in a newly created universe, it gives you like a fresh tapestry to existence that allows you to find things that you wouldn't find in the built universe that we have. Having this bear figure that can talk and that can build relationships with a neighborhood and that can go to prison, that is a new artistic potential for us to like grow through. And I believe that the world is served when we take those opportunities. I think if we saw going to a movie theater or sitting in front of our TV, not just as like, oh, we're distracting ourselves from the world. This is a retreat. It's somehow separate from quote unquote real life. We'd all be better off. Like that is, I actually think that filmmakers put a lot more conscious thought and time into shaping their worlds than we are able to put into shaping ours. Like what's the famous quote? Like humans plan and God laughs. Like we don't actually script our lives, which means that we're constantly in an improv game. And improv is great, but a lot of us go to films more than we go to improv because we want a deeply thought through finished product with soundtrack, with effects, with beautiful storyline. And when we allow that to not only be like an aesthetic experience, but also a spiritual experience, I think it benefits us in our spiritual communities. And so my hope is that whatever your religious background is, you listen to this, you're Latter-day Saint, you're Jewish, you're whatever you might be, my hope is that next time you're sitting in front of a screen watching something, you can see yourself not as a watcher external to what's happening, but rather as a participant ready to be shaped by what you're doing.
Thanks to Lex for finally helping me see this movie. I'll be honest, the film was a real surprise to me. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did, and I didn't expect for the film to be excellent. I'm not often drawn to children's art and film, so I was delighted to be shown something so outstanding. Talking to Lex reminded me of watching movies with the kids in my life. My sister and I started babysitting when we were 11 years old, and that was my main job until I started college. And even after college, later, when my friends were having babies, I often got to watch movies with their kids, which I have to say is a real honor. So, my recommendations are about some of my favorite movies, but they're also going to be a chance for me just to tell nostalgic stories about watching movies with these kids. My first recommendation is The Brave Little Toaster from 1987. I watched this on VHS in a family's basement on their old couch, all these kids slumped against me as they were getting ready for bed. They were very engaged in the plot, which is about these old appliances trying to make their way to the college dorm of the kid who grew up in the home where they live too. But I was giggling over John Lovitz and Phil Hartman, who did wry, hilarious voice acting for that film. But the ending, when this toaster sacrifices himself for his friends, got me right in the heart, guys. I'm a big softie when it comes right down to it. The next one I want to recommend is Toy Story. And I know, it's a classic for a reason. I'm not introducing you to anything new here. But for me, it and the entire quadrology will remain some of the best films out there about friendship, community life, ego, self-awareness, and the evolution of love. When the first one was in the theaters, I took two kids I babysat with me to watch it. And there's that scene where the mutant toys crawl out from under Sid's bed. And those two kids climbed into my lap and wrapped themselves so tight around my head, I couldn't even see. which was fine because, you know, I was scared too. And the last movie I want to talk about is Hugo by Martin Scorsese, adapted from a children's novel. I took my nieces and nephew to see this film in a little theater in Annapolis, Maryland. You know, it's about these two kids who make friends and they have to solve a mystery. Who is the one child's grandfather and what happens in France? And it has to do with the beginnings of movies. And so one of the things that incredibly moved me was sitting in a theater and watching these early films get played out on the screen as they would have played for the original audiences. Things like a train arriving into the station and the gardener getting hosed and all of these Georges Méliès films that are known for their magic and special effects. And I literally was weeping in the movie theater watching this. And my nieces and nephew were so bored. They just were like, Aunt Heather, when is this going to be done? And I was like, shh, it's so beautiful. So that was a movie that didn't really go well for the kids I was with. And I don't know if I recommend it generally for kids, but if you're a movie buff, it is a wonderful experience. And I totally recommend. That's our show today. So thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Heather Bigley. VoiceOver is produced by BYU Radio and is edited by Spencer Boyer.